Everyone, welcome to today's episode of Secure Steps. Today I'm joined with Kristen Lewis. Kristen Lewis is the Education and Training Program Manager at the Sexual Assault Resource Center located in Oregon. SARC has provided advocacy and support services for over 45 years, dedicating to serving individuals who have been impacted by sexual violence. Hi, Kristen. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk about this and learn with you all and grow and yeah, I'm really happy to be here.
Great. To start, could you introduce yourself and share a bit about your background and what brought you to your role at SARC?
So I work at SARC. That's how I usually talk about it, SARC. I have been there for a couple years. I have been in the domestic and sexual violence field for about 13 years now. And then before that, I was enlisted in the military. I have most of my background in direct service with survivors. So working with survivors and co-creating plans and safety plans and emotional support, advocacy, things like that in the community and with survivors themselves. A lot of time on the support line, crisis lines, and responding to hospitals, things like that. Most of that has been my time for the past 13 years, and it's only the past couple years that I have been honored and lucky enough to do prevention specific programming and this role that I have right now at SARC. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. Could you speak a little bit about why education and training is essential when addressing sexual assault and IPV? I know that you've been getting involved in a lot of prevention advocacy, so if you could speak about that end, that would be great.
Yeah, happy to. Yes. So prevention, education, training, it's a time where we get to really carve out space to talk about relationships, right? We are constantly learning about relationships and power dynamics from those around us and from the general society. Whether or not we do that intentionally or whether or not we examine it, we are constantly learning those things. Like under capitalism, we are taught that relationships are extractive, right? We are fed narratives of power, and how it's okay or not okay to enact them like internally and externally. So we are constantly doing that as people. And when we do, or how I see my work in prevention is carving out those times and spaces for each other to learn how we are doing that, why we are doing that. Is that serving us? Is that what we're wanting? What are other ways to do that? How do we have language around that? How do we grow our emotional intelligence tools and muscles? And how do we envision it differently? So that's how I see it in the larger aspect. That's not just in schools either. Prevention should not just be in one area. It is so impactful when it's infused around us, right? It's repeated over and over to us again, different ways that we can care for one another, that we can care for ourselves, that we can reduce harm, we can reduce the impact of it and learn how to heal and move forward in that. So that's how I see prevention, and that's how we address it as like a general thing.
Yeah, amazing. I'm super curious to ask about your mention of power structures within a capitalistic society. Could you talk a little bit more about that and delve into your curiosities and like your studies within that field?
Yes. Oh my goodness. So it structures so much. It structures how we relate to each other, what we think relationship is about, whether it's getting something from someone or and also how we bring ourselves to that relationship, what we see our own worth as. And it's huge. It's like very much infused by all these different things, all the different isms, right? So under capitalism, like if you can't produce a good, there's a lot of also like ableism within that, right? If you can't do a thing, maybe you don't deserve fill in the blank. And that often it seems very large, it seems very big, like it's divorced. Like one of these aspects is really big and out in the clouds, and the rest of it is our everyday life. But part about training and prevention, I think, is connecting those two, doing conscious, like essentially community consciousness raising of how these larger systems affect our everyday. They are not, violence is not inherent. It doesn't magically happen. And these larger aspects create how we interact with one another. Racism, right, and xenophobia influence how we who we make sure is safe and who we make sure doesn't experience harm, and who it's kind of okay if they perpetuate harm. And if they do harm, then it's condoned, right? So when we think about those larger aspects infusing how we relate to one another in our everyday, we can chew on it a little more and examine it and hopefully change it.
Amazing. Thank you so much. That's so true. I feel like even personally, whenever I hear about misconceptions surrounding IPV, a lot of people think that it's primarily solely on a physical basis, but there are so many other compounding components, i.e., emotional manipulation, economic and financial manipulation are so prevalent. So it's amazing to hear how you're also involved in understanding how these factors I guess like reciprocate when it comes to IPV violence.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yes, like IPV violence, domestic violence, sexual violence, it's not all just this one physical aspect. There's so many more that it overlaps, right? You said emotional and financial, spiritual, and those compound. And yes, there might result in this physical aspect of it, but that's not the only way we experience such violence now.
Yeah, definitely. On that note, I'm curious about what misconceptions about sexual assault and IPV you encounter and how you work to challenge these misconceptions.
Yes, there's so many, so it's hard to kind of name all of them, which I will not at I won't be able to. I think one that I've been chewing on lately is the misconception that survivors always automatically know that what happened to them was wrong, or that it was violence. There's a lot of different reasons, right? Many survivors are harmed when they're children, so not having even language for that experience, normalization of violence or normalization of pushing boundaries, crossing boundaries. So survivors may not even know. They might know in their heart, right, or in their bodies, that like something feels off. But it can take time to know and have language to describe what happened. I also think that, as you were saying, I think we have this idea that, especially with sexual violence, it's like how we see in the movies. There might be a lot of physical harm, or things that you can see or point to, but oftentimes that's not always the case. So I think those are some misconceptions. I think that the one that I talked about, that it's only this interpersonal, or that it's just natural, that sexual violence will just happen, or that it's okay for some people to experience sexual violence. For example, I think that there's a lot, maybe it's just in my bubble, that there's a lot less jokes about sexual violence, but there's still some, right, about like the inevitability of like people who are incarcerated, that they kind of deserve whatever violence they experience while they're incarcerated, things like that, right? So a misconception that it is natural for sexual violence to happen or violence in general. And then the very common ones, right, that sexual violence doesn't even happen in intimate partner relationships, that it's from a stranger, which is just not true. Most people harmed are harmed by somebody that they know or care for. Yeah, I think those are some things.
Yeah, totally agree. I feel like on a personal level, I've noticed there are so many different like forms of normalization in terms of sexual violence within media, whether it's within like pop culture or on a day-to-day basis. It's often ingrained in our everyday vernacular and the way we describe violence. So it's amazing to see how there are people actively challenging this normalization.
Absolutely. I love that you brought that up, how we even name violence or think about it. We often think about it as a very like one-on-one kind of situation. But if we think about it in a broader dynamic, which I think is always more useful, reproductive violence, right? Taking away somebody's ability to control that, whether it's harming somebody's access to birth control or sabotaging it, right? Or even access on a larger, like political and structural scale, that can still be considered sexual violence. There was a time where taking off a condom wasn't like seen as violence, and now we have language for that, and that very much is. Like, I really appreciate we now have that, but there was a time where that wasn't the case. So there has been movement and positive movement, but misconceptions still abound.
Yeah, definitely. I really appreciate your thoughts on the, I guess, current state of how people perceive intimate partner violence. It definitely brings a lot of light to how we might not like explicitly express it, but implicitly, a lot of people have these different thoughts and notes about IPV that are definitely perpetrators of violence in our everyday. But yeah. I want to move on to more about SARC. I'm curious about some of the key programs that SARC offers and what demographics they're aimed at.
Yes, we do wonderful things. We're a small team, but we're mighty. So we have free counseling. We're able to support survivors. So we serve, let's rewind, we serve all survivors of sexual violence of all genders, of all sexual orientations. And we primarily serve folks in Washington County in Oregon, though we have some further reach, obviously, than just that, which is very exciting. But that is the survivors of Washington County who we primarily serve. We are kind of like right next to Portland, if for folks who don't know where that's at. And we have free counseling. We're able to offer counseling directly in English and Spanish. We also have a 24/7 support line for survivors and their support systems as well. We have advocates who do case management and who are completely confidential. So something really unique about what we're able to offer survivors in Oregon is that we are not mandated reporters. We're able to be completely confidential and talk with them about really rough stuff, and knowing that that information is going to be real safe. Our advocates also respond to hospitals when people are getting medical care after experiencing sexualized violence. And then we have our prevention, which we get to talk to community, build community, and do trainings both in a prevention way, but also how to serve survivors best in a trauma-informed way. And I think that's it. Yeah, that's what SARC does. We've been doing it for quite some time, and we are a passionate group.
Amazing. It's so great to hear that SARC is a non-mandated reporting outlet for communities. I don't know too many of them out there, but it's very important to cultivate like safe spaces where people can feel free to express their situations without any fear of any like external level of fear or repercussion. So that's amazing to hear.
Yeah, survivors deserve someone to talk to. We all deserve someone to share our experience with, and to hold those really big emotions when things are often really confusing. And being able to do that with advocates is really, I think, special. Advocates obviously will never, support lines will never replace friends, families, colleagues, neighbors. They do a magical thing that we can't do, but we also offer this other thing where survivors can talk and not have to manage our experience of it, not have to manage how we're gonna respond to it, and just kind of talk it out and be believed. And it's something that I think is a gift we get to do with survivors. Yeah.
Definitely. I know you mentioned earlier that IPV doesn't just start between when you're an adult or when you're an older individual, but it often starts when you're a younger member of society. It starts in the household domestically. And so I'm curious as to understand how SARC engages youth in prevention efforts and also what makes these programs effective.
Oh, yes. So we have there's many different spokes to prevention, and SARC doesn't do all of them, and all of them are like needed, right? So some of the things that we do is talk with youth around healthy relationships and what they want. So we often hear about them as like green flags, right? And talking about different types of relationships. And obviously, like, yes, consent and language around consent, but really also like deep into that of being able to hold rejection and know what, when we want to say yes and when we get to change our minds and doing that together. We also have we did a youth power workshop a little bit ago where youth were encouraged and taught how to have like difficult conversations so that they were those members with tools in their communities, in their own communities. And then also teaching, I think, communities in general how to engage with youth and value, as you said, these younger members of our society, and hearing what they're needing and wanting, and giving them the accurate information to do such and do that and imagine a world that they want. So we also there's one another program or a little aspect I would love to talk about, which is Reclaim Reclama, which that is a art magazine we at SARC put out every year. That is art submitted by people impacted by sexual violence. So last year we had one where people did artwork, and some of it was like reimagining or imagining what we want in the future, imagining a life free of domestic and sexual violence, things like that, right? So that art is always every year whenever we do that, it's so impactful, it's so exciting. And we encourage many people of all of our community members to submit that and then get to like enjoy it together.
That's so amazing. Art is such a great way for people to like have an outlet to express their thoughts and for other people to understand how they're feeling and their situation. So I'm so delighted to hear that that's something that you guys have been putting out. I'm also curious as to how SARC incorporates intersectionality into its education as well as its initiatives.
Yeah, so we try to infuse it throughout, from the very basics of like how we sh like structure things and whether we do things or not. We always try to make sure to look to see if there's other community members already doing the work so we can come alongside them and echo what they're doing and make it as impactful as we can. So really looking at community groups already doing that. We know that survivors live at the intersection of their identities. So any of our prevention and or direct service has to be from that point of view and from that experience if we're going to be if we're going to be doing the work at all. And so it's that of where we start, who we partner with. We want to partner with people who are most impacted. We want to partner with groups that are targeted. So It's not only ensuring that our programming or our trainings bring in that perspective, but that they're rooted from that perspective, and that they're highlighting what's already being done as well. Since SARC isn't like a specifically culturally specific organization, we want to make sure we're doing that as well. Yeah.
I'm also curious as to if you've noticed changes in the broader fields of IPV prevention, especially with the rise of digital spaces. I know that more recently there are so many things that people have been resorting to in terms of prevention. So if there's anything on that end you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I think, yeah, first, like digital spaces, right? They allow us access to like so much amazing information and community that is life-changing if we didn't have it, right? Our worlds get so much larger, is the hope, is the want, right? We can learn about concepts that are like liberation focused and connect with others with our same passions and, see how we are like truly connected in a world that encourages hyper individualism. So yay. And we have these like huge amount of pipelines that are encouraging youth to have deeply misogynistic and deeply racist and xenophobic and all of the isms, belief systems. And those are really hard to combat. That's what I, as you know, the things that I chew on when I go to sleep of these digital spaces that are very much having some really loud voices, saying some really harmful and violent things that I think is a little worry, that is quite worrisome. I also think about digital as in like general, that we don't have nearly close enough safety nets for how we are making AI relationships. It's something I think about, and something that I am expecting in the future that my field will be having some big conversations around how do we have harm reduction conversations, all these things, all these words that we have right now, but adapting within an AI experience. I guess that I think, and on the good end, the digital space is allowing us to get the access to information that some of us have been denied, whether that's comprehensive sex ed or information around relationship dynamics that are taboo, but still very healthy and very normal and very common. So the both and, the both and.
Yeah, definitely. There are so many practical and ethical concerns in regards to AI use. The benefits are definitely great in terms of accessibility, but it's important to be aware of the drawbacks and be cautious about the implications of AI. So thank you so much for bringing that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm curious as to what steps our listeners can take to support SARC's work or also get involved in prevention efforts that might be local to them or on a national basis.
Oh, so many good things. I think making sure that you think about prevention in a really like dynamic way, kind of the things that we've been talking about. There's so many ways to infuse the passions you already have and to incorporate violence prevention in them. You don't have to change your passions. I actually love when people and start infusing these this language that we're talking about, these concepts into their everyday where I can never go. I'm like, I don't know that field. That's amazing. So I think on an interpersonal level, having ideas or conversations around power, about growing our own emotional intelligence, around sharing these tools with our kids, with our families, with obviously, in age-appropriate ways, but having those discussions and what do we want in relationship? What brings us joy? Imagining that and making that happen. So that's like on an interpersonal level, and then like on a larger scale, right? You can always come alongside organizations and communities that are already doing the work. There are amazing people already doing this work, and coming alongside and supporting in solidarity is that's an action is so needed. And then on a larger scale, I think protecting our funding. I think there's really legitimate concerns and fears that this incoming administration will let federal funding sources lapse or dramatically cut them. That the domestic and sexual violence field, the violence prevention field in general, will be demonized or invalidated, and that our work will be made to just solely focus on prosecution. So I don't want that to happen, and we all don't want that to happen. So I think ensuring funding and ways that we can make sure that there are people that are able to do this work, and survivors able to do this work. And then, I mean, those are a couple. I could keep going, but those are a couple.
Yeah, definitely. Those all sound like very, very important things to be involved with. On a final note, do you have any additional things to add or any final thoughts to leave our listeners with?
I think I'll I think I've said so many things. I think you've created a really wonderful space to talk about this work, and I think I might just leave it there. I always will revert back to my roots, which is ending things with like, believe survivors, believe them and hear them. They are the folks doing the work, the violence prevention work, and I honor that I've been able to learn from them and grow with them, and get to continue to do so.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for your input and all of your thoughts today. I really, truly appreciate it so much.